Good morning. It's my pleasure to be with you here on this wonderful, wonderful day. We finished the Yom Noraim, of course, and we're up to the holiday of Sukkot. We're up to the holiday of Sukkot, and there's much that Sukkot has to teach us, must to teach us for this time, much to teach us during the year. Let me begin with the story.
And I was, before I made Aliyah, I was a rabbi in Manhattan on the Upper West Side. And we had wonderful, many wonderful, incredible days and times in Manhattan. We were there for, I was the intern, the assistant, the associate, and the rabbi. We were there for together about 13, 14 years. And many memorable times. But perhaps a day that stands out more than the others was September 11th. September 11th in Manhattan was an awful, terrible, hard to even put into words day. And that's true about everyone, everywhere, not just obviously Manhattan. But in Manhattan, it was a little different because you smelled the smoke. You saw you could even see it, and the people. Meaning people were walking all the way from downtown, even all the way up to the Upper West Side. And our firefighters, our police force, were sent down to the scene, to the World Trade Center. There was a great, it was a real time of togetherness in the city that I certainly didn't experience before, and some extent stayed afterwards, but of course not to the same level. We connected with the firefighters, the police force. We raised money for the children of we had one local fireman who was killed, and we raised money to set up some college funds for his children. There was a real connection for people in the city that was profound. It crossed gender, race, creed, crossed all lines. It was really profound. And one of the aspects of the reaction that I will not forget is a particular interest for our topic. This morning. You know, it's true about Americans in general. It's not just true about people in New York City, but we generally walk with bitachon. We walk with confidence, and we walk with security. We spend a lot of our tax money on our defense spending, and we spend a lot of our mental energies feeling that we're secure, feeling that we, you know, we're not afraid of terrorist attacks. No, in New York. We're not afraid of the New York before September 11th. We're not afraid of terrorist attacks. We're not afraid of outside threats. It just doesn't touch our shores. It doesn't touch us where we live. We hear about it. You know, I remember when I was speaking literally that summer, I spoke about Hagrizim and Har Eval and living in a place of blessing, of comfort, where there's no fear of outside dangers, of living in a place where there is danger and there is outside, and how we in America, you know, don't have those same fears. And then, like, just 2 months later, you know, a month later, September 11th happened. What happened September 11th rocked the country, and certainly it rocked the people who live in the city. People in the city. You know, we don't think about it now because we know now that September 11th was a series of planned attacks on that day. And then Al-Qaeda, either they didn't have the plans or the ability to do anything to follow up. But after September 11th, we didn't know that. And people were waiting for the next shoe to drop. You know, the anthrax scares and all those other, you know, the lights, the red, the yellow alerts, the green alerts, I mean, all the color schemes. Yeah, I had people come to me, congregants, really, really worried. And asking me if they thought they should leave the city. Because A, Manhattan is more of a target, and B, I was the rabbi of something called the Jewish Center. Okay, so can you have a better target than something called the Jewish Center? Like, they were really scared. And we spent a lot of time and energy and thought on security. And what happened that day that I never experienced before is that people began to feel vulnerable. They began to feel vulnerable. And that was not a feeling that they were necessarily accustomed to, certainly in that way. And I think it's that vulnerability that actually taught us something about life. And as the title of the share indicates, I think there's a great wisdom. There's a great wisdom to vulnerability. And I think there's a lot of Sukkot that teaches us that lesson. So I wanna flesh that out a little bit with you and explain. Let's start with the story. Story of Masechet Avodah Zarah. It's a fascinating story about the end of days and how at the end of days, all the nations of the world come to God, and they're upset. They're upset because they see the Jews get rewarded, and they do not get rewarded. How come they don't get a reward? So look at the Gemara in source number 1. Elakach omrim obdei kochavim lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono shel olam, Yisrael shekiblu eichen kaimu. I don't understand. The Jews get rewarded. What do? Amar lahem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ani me'id behem shekaimu the Torah kula. I testify that what the Jews did is they kept the Torah. They kept the Torah, and therefore they deserve reward. Amru lefanav, the nations of the world said to Hashem, Ribono shel olam, tana lanu meirosh v'na'asen. Okay, give it to us now. Give it to us, and we'll do it. Amar lahem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shovtim shabal, ami shetarach me'arav Shabbat, yochal b'Shabbat. It's a famous image. One who toils on Erev Shabbat, he eats on Shabbat. An interesting lesson of Shabbat, if you think about what Shabbos is trying to teach us. One who prepares, Shabbat, you can't do melacha, but before you can, if you prepare, then you eat. If you don't prepare, then you don't eat. Nevertheless, even though he's saying that, and meaning, what's the image over here? Erev Shabbat is the world today. And Shabbat is Achrit Hayamim, is the end of days. The end of days, you are rewarded. You're rewarded for what you did now. It's a very poignant image. Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba. That's another issue. Alahafo Pikein, but nevertheless, Mitzvah Kal Yeshli Vasukah Shema Lachain Vasuota. I'm going to give you a chance. I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a really small mitzvah. Do Sukkah. Do the mitzvah of Sukkah, that's it. But my karle mitzvah kala, why do they call that a light mitzvah? Mishum deletz bechisaron kis, because there's no great expense for Sukkot. Obviously they didn't have the hotel scene at the time. It's changed the chisaron kis. But okay, putting up a Sukkah, it's a mitzvah kala, it's not such a big deal. Miyad kol achad v'chad notel v'alech v'osa Sukkah v'rosh kago. Immediately, each one of the nations of the world, they went to their roofs and they built their sukkah. Kadosh Baruch Hu matir lehem chama b'tkufot tamuz. And God unsheathed the sun to make it a summer burning sun. Kol echad v'cham avayi b'sukkotov v'yotze. And each of the nations of the world left the sukkah and they kicked it. Ma'atir, so the Gemara says, I don't understand. Ma'atir, the Gemara says, Va'amarta, Enei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Baba Trinayim, Briotam. How could Hashem, trick the other nations? It seems unfair. So, Mishum, Dishol, Namiz, Emne, Dimashlu, Tzkuvatam, Ad Chag, Babali, Tzar. No, it's not such a trick. Happens to the Jews, too. Happens to the Jews that in Sukkot, it's very hot. It's true for them, also. It's not such a unfair test. So, the Gemara asks, Va'amar, Rabba, Mitzar, Potter, Minasuk. Okay, fine. So, but we have a halakha that if you are in pain, which we'll talk about a little later, but if you're suffering, then you are exempt from sukkah. So what are the nations of the world do wrong? The Jews, if they're in the sukkah, the tzkufat tamuz, the sun, they'd also leave. And you can leave. You're patur. You're exempt. See, Mara says, oh, very nice. So, nihid the patur, b'yuta amim b'vayte. Fine, they're exempt. And who says you should kick it? You should kick the sukkah. So what's the difference between the nations of the world and the Jews? The Jews also leave the sukkah. The nations of the world leave the sukkah. The difference is, one kicks the sukkah, and one does not. What is going on with this Gemara? What is the message? What is the lesson? What is the simple explanation even? Somebody kicking the sukkah, somebody not kicking the sukkah. The Jews do it for love.
Let's keep them on the Jews for do it for love. What else?
They feel bad if they have to leave.
Jews feel bad. The Jews feel sad if they have to leave. The Jews feel sad. Anything else?
They can go back.
The Jews appreciate it. They can go back.
The kick is a sign of contempt.
The kick is a sign of contempt. Okay, good. So I think all of this is true. And to understand this better and really get to the heart of what the Chag of Sukkot is about, I think we need to do a little halachic analysis. Do a little study of the halacha of Sukkot. And it'll help us understand the story along the lines of the comments that I already mentioned. And more so, help us understand what the mahut, what the nature is of the Chag, and how it relates to the rest of the year as well. So let's start with source number two. Source number two are the psukim that deal with Chag. B'sukot yeshvu shivat yamim. Kol ozach b'Yisrael yeshvu b'sukot. That pasuk, what's the word that tells you what he's supposed to do with the sukkah? Teshvu. B'sukot yeshvu. What does teshvu mean?
Dwell,
to live. Who said Taduru? Okay, Taduru, good. We'll get there in a second. Taduru, to live. Okay, any other comments of Teshvu? Sit? Okay, good.
Sleep?
Okay, so let's see what the Gemara does. So if we look at the source number three, the Mishnah says, Kol Shabbat Yamim Adam Osa Sukkatu Kevo Beitu Arai, all 7 days, a person should make his sukkah into keva, into the permanent dwelling place. The permanent place, ubeito, and his house should be arai. What does arai mean?
Temporary.
Okay. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanani, Kol Shabbat Yamadu Osa Sukkatu Kevo Beitu Arai, Keita, what are you supposed to do? Hayelo Kelim Na'im, Ma'am Nesukkah. If you have nice furniture, you have nice kelim, you bring it to the sukkah. You have nice matches, you bring it to the sukkah. You eat, you drink, you're metayel, you spend time in the sukkah. And not even, how do I know? This is Tana Rabbanan. The rabbis learn, teshvu, kain tadura. The word teshvu, the rabbis understand, is kain tadura. You should treat it, teshvu, in this case, isn't sitting, it's dwelling. You should act towards it like you live in it. Mikan amru, koshavat yamos of skatu keva beitu arai, ketzad, and the same thing, kelim na'im, so na'ot, you're supposed to eat, drink, and everything in the sukkah. So what the Gemara is telling us is that you're supposed to treat the sukkah as you treat your house, and there are two ramifications the Gemara is mentioning. What are the two ramifications? One is how to furnish it. How do you furnish the sukkah? Okay, which is very interesting. You're supposed to bring your nice kelim, and I want to get back to that. It's a fascinating halakha. And secondly, what you're supposed to do in the sukkah. Okay, you're not supposed to just eat in the sukkah, but you're supposed to eat, you're supposed to live there. So you eat and you sleep and you hang out and you read and you relax. You're supposed to live in the sukkah. The Mishnah in source number 4 goes on further and says and tells you the meals, you know, the places you're supposed to, what you're supposed to do. How many meals? Remeleza Omer. 14 meals a person eats in the sukkah. They had 2 meals a day. Achat bayom v'achat balayla. Achat bayom v'achat balayla. Evachamer me'enu davar kitzvah chutzvah yom pir shulchan. No, there's no set amount. You eat whatever you normally eat. And they both argue, they both agree, my time is Remeleza, teishvu kein tadurum. You're supposed to treat the sukkah as you normally treat your home. And there's a debate. Somebody says you normally eat 2 meals a day, so therefore you have to eat 2 meals a day in the sukkah. The other one says you normally eat whatever you want to eat. So you treat it like you normally do, and there's no set amount. But everybody agrees on the principle that teshvu is ke'ein tadur. Okay. Now this principle just doesn't add astringencies to us. It doesn't just add new halachot, but it also actually limits the mitzvah. It limits the mitzvah. Let me explain. Look at source number 5. A very interesting Gemara. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Amar Rav. Avel Chayev B'Sukkah. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Amar Rav. Avel Chayev B'Sukkah. And Avel is Chayev in Sukkah. Who is an Avel?
A mourner.
So an Avel, No, so I think in this case, if he's in mourning, it's probably in Shloshim, let's say. And somebody who's in Shloshim, and the Gemara says he's Chayav B'Sukkah. Gemara asks, Pshita, Avol is Chayav B'Nitzvos, why would you think the Avol is Patur B'Sukkah? Why do you even need to say it? It's so obvious. The Gemara says, Ma the Tema, I might have thought, oh, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Amar Rabbi Mitzvah, Patur B'Sukkah. I might have thought, because we have a halacha that Mitzvah, somebody's name is exempt from Sukkah. Hainami Mitzvahu. The Avol's also in pain. So I might have thought that he's exempt from the Sukkah. Kamash Malan. And here we learn, Hani Milit Sa'ar Dimamela. Who is Pater? Somebody with a Tsar is Dimamela. We have to define those terms. Aval Hacha. Ihu Dikam Mitzar Nafshe. I Baile the Yatube Daite. He is Mitzar himself and he needs to be able to Yatube Daite. In a sense, put himself in a different frame of mind. How do you understand this, Gemara? What's the answer? What's the difference between Avel and Mitzta'er? What would you say? What's the difference? One is a personal and one is everybody? So one is a personal and one is everybody. Okay, let's keep that in mind. Yeah?
I see Avel as a status, a state of being, that you fall within the framework of an Avel, whether you feel it or not, but that's what you are. You're an Avel, like Shloshim or and Mitzdayer, someone who's actively feel with Mitzdayer.
He is. So is it a level, is a status versus
a level,
real
it's
pain?
It's a feeling versus a status.
A feeling versus a status.
You have both. You know, you could have to sit God with sit Shiva for somebody that you've had.
I understand. That's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So the sukkah is causing the pain. Being in the sukkah is the cause of your pain. And Avel is in pain wherever they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe the difference is the pain being caused by the sukkah or the pain is exists independently. Okay. Good. Yeah.
I think that the sukkah is physical discomfort, whereas an Avel is emotionally.
Mitzar's physical discomfort versus Avel, which is more psychological pain, yeah?
Mitzar could be a temporary condition. An Avel is an Avel, as long as he's an Avel.
A Mitzar
today and tomorrow.
Okay, good. So, yes, you know what I'm saying? Okay, so there's a lot of these thoughts are reflected in the Rishonim. The words of the Gemara are somewhat unclear. We look, for example, at source number 12. The Mordechai is Mordechai ben Hillel, a student of the Maram. We actually spoke about him before. He quotes the Amar Rava Mitzar Patur min Sukkah Katav Rabbeinu Eliezer Mimitz. The Sefer Yerim, Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, Mordechai is the end of the 13th century. Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz is the middle of the 12th century, a student of Rabbeinu Tam. He writes, Peir Sheyesh lo Tzar min Sukkah Ubitzeto Yinatzel. That he writes that the difference is whether the tsar is caused by the sukkah or whether it exists outside of the sukkah. And why should that make a difference? He said, because the sukkah, the halacha is that it's teshvu kein tadiru. If you treat the sukkah as you treat your house, and you're in your house, and there's pain that's being caused by you to you by your house, what will you do?
Leave.
You will leave. Same thing with the sukkah, meaning the sukkah is not just, we don't just say that it's a minimum, that you treat it like the house, you have to furnish it and eat and drink. It doesn't just add obligations to you, but it also is a maximum. You're supposed to treat it like your house, and only like your house. And therefore, If the sukkah is causing you any pain, just like if your house would cause you pain, what would you do? You would leave. So you leave the sukkah. You leave the sukkah. The truth is that this halakha, this concept, and that the Rishonim use, could be used to explain many halakhot. Look at source number 7. Tana Rabbanan. Our rabbis learned. Oche drachim bayom, tirim min sukkah bayom. If somebody is traveling in the day, then he's exempt from the sukkah in the day. Further, b'chayav in b'layla, but he's obligated at night. Okay, drachim b'layla, if somebody's traveling at night, Pterum in a sukkah b'layla. He's exempt from the sukkah at night. B'cham miyom. He's abayin de hoche drachem b'yom u b'layla. Pterum in a sukkah. Ben b'yom. Ben b'layla. The guy's traveling day and night, and he's exempt from sukkah both in the day and the night. And the night. So let's keep on going. Yadr b'chitz rabba rabhune. We can skip this story. Let's go to the next one. Tana rabbanan. The end of the fourth line. Shomer yir b'yom, pterum in a sukkah b'yom. If you're watching the day, you're exempt from the day. Chayim l'chayim b'layla. Shomer yir b'layla, pterum in a sukkah b'layla, chayim b'yom. Shomer yir b'yom 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 b'layla, pterum in a sukkah b'yom 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 b'layla. If you watch during the day and night, you're exempt from sukkah altogether. Shomer ganot to par desim, pterum in a sukkah b'yom b'layla. And if you are a guard of the gardens, then you're exempt from the sukkah. And the Gemara asks, la'avdei sukkah asamaleis. Why should you be exempt? Why don't you just make a sukkah in the garden and sit there? More answer. Bayomer teishvu kein tedurum. Teishvu kein tedurum. So what does teishvu kein tedurum mean in these cases? That you are supposed to treat the sukkah like you treat your house. If you don't live in your house when you're in your job, because your job is outside, then what? Then you're exempt from sukkah. You don't have to be in the sukkah. And the same thing is true if you're traveling. Look at Tosfos, source number 8. Okay, drachamim, kol zanafka miteshu kein tedur, kashem sha'adu bebeito, enu nimna melatzeto derek. If somebody's in your house, you don't say, listen, I have a big trip I want to go on, but I'm not going to go. You know why? Because I really want to stay in my house. I can't leave my house. Nobody says that. It's the same thing with the sukkah. V'chein mitztar to patshu'el minasur, enu miteshu kein tedur, de'en adem dar, b'makam shem mitztar. You have to treat it like your house. Nowadays, we have, because we're so frum, we have the portable, foldable, collapsible sukkah. So you travel anywhere, you open up your trunk, and a sukkah pops out. Like you put it on the ground, and a sukkah pops out, and you eat in the sukkah. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's always nice to have things. But they're totally portable sukkahs. They're foldable, portable sukkahs. It bounces up and it all comes out. I don't know if they've created the pocket sukkah yet, but certainly the trunk sukkah they've created. But based on this Gemara, again, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but based on this Gemara, you know, it seems like you're supposed to treat the sukkah like you treat your house. And that's it. Okay. That is one. That is one approach to understanding this Gemara. The difference between Avel and Mitztaher is whether the sukkah is causing the damage, the causing the pain, or not. But the truth is that the... Meaning the pain is just because... The question is, what does it mean the sukkah is causing pain? The pain is caused by being in the sukkah, as opposed to being in your house. For example, if the sukkah has a lot of mosquitoes in there, so the pain is caused by being in the sukkah, and the pain would not exist if you were in your house, as opposed to when you're in Avel, the pain will be always. Okay, yes.
But this is all concerning it's my sukkah, I own the sukkah, but today we take part in someone else's sukkah. So all of this, is it applicable?
Yeah, sure. In the same way. It wouldn't matter. Okay. This is all one approach. But if you look at the words of the Gemara, it actually doesn't seem like, or certainly the words about the Avel, it doesn't seem like it. The Gemara says that the difference between the Avel and the Mitzta'er is Abel Hacha by the Abel, you who's to come mitzvah nafshe. The person is being mitzvah himself, and he needs to control himself. So what exactly does that mean? So another approach is taken in this Gemara is not whether it's caused by the sukkah or not, or caused when you're in the sukkah or not. Rather, it's pain that is controllable, that's caused by you, in a sense, or not. And it's a fascinating concept. I mean, Rav Soloveitchik, one of his five drashot, has this article. It doesn't relate to this halakha, but it applies. He has an article about that relates to Esu Gibor, who is a hero. The Mishnah Avot says somebody who's a kovish es yetzero, somebody who conquers his own will. You know, in Western thought, the hero is the guy who conquers other people. So in Jewish wisdom literature, and that's all those four of them in the beginning of the fourth paragraph in Avot, it's all, you know, flips your it's all counterintuitive to your natural, you know, Western mindset of who is a gibor and who is a chacham. You know, chacham is not somebody who teaches other people, but is somebody who learns from other people. So it all flips it around. But anyway, with the gibor, he's not conquering others, but he's conquering himself. So Machen talks about, very poignantly, about a person who lost a close relative, sitting in Avelut, third day of Avelut. And then Yom Tov comes. And what happened when Yom Tov comes? What happens? Avelut's finished. But it's not just that Avelut is finished, but what? Your chayim. You have to be happy. Samachta b'chayecha. And your ability to conquer your own feelings of Avelut, to turn it into simcha, that's the gibur. That's the halachic hero. And in a sense, that could be what's going on over here with the Avel. That the Avel, according to this approach, then the issue is not so much whether the sukkah is the place of the pain. Rather, if you're in anguish and you're in the sukkah, okay, and in a legitimate way, I guess, whatever that means, then you are exempt from sitting in the sukkah. Why? So there's a whole other approach to understanding this. If you look at source number 14, the Ritva, Rabbeinu Yontov ben Avraham of Seville in the 14th century, he writes, why does it say Ezrach in the Pasuk? Shemati b'shem Rabbeinu HaGadol HaRamban. The Ritva actually didn't learn directly from the Ramban. He learned from the Rashba and the Ra'ah. But they were all students of the Ramban. So the Ramban is the Rabbeinu HaGadol. Sheba lomar shelo yitchayev b'sukah el mi shehu ke'ezrach ra'anan. That a person is chayev in the sukkah only if he could live in the sukkah as an ezrach ra'anan. What does ezrach ra'anan mean?
Fresh, happy,
joyful. Okay? Ezrach ra'anan. Prav ha'ochid rachim v'shomai perot u'mitzta'er. And that's the exclusion of mitzta'er. Everything I'm teaching you to do is from here. This is the concept. The concept is that in the sukkah you have to be happy. And what's going on over here is that I think what the Rishonim are reflecting is that when we talk about making the sukkah into your home, we're not just talking about what I said, first of all, adding obligations, how you furnish it and how you eat and drink, what you do in it. We're not just talking about limitations of if you leave your house, then you should leave the sukkah. We're not just talking about that. We're talking about a quality of life. You're happy in your home. That's why you live there. You feel comfortable in your home. You work to make your home comfortable, a comfortable place. So you have to feel the joy that you would feel in your home. You have to also feel in the sukkah. And if you don't, then you're patur, then you're exempt. And all of this is reflecting this concept that we saw at the beginning, which is that on Sukkot it's Oseh Adam Sukkato Keva. The sukkah becomes the permanent, becomes your home. Ubeitu Arai, and the home is just Arai. So you have to relate and deal with the sukkah like it's Keva, like you would your home. Not just minimal, not just with the minimal requirements, not just to leave, but even the quality of life has to be according to the Rishonim, as it is in your home. Yes?
But it's okay for, say, the Avel, who cannot feel joy, and therefore doesn't have to be in the sukkah, to be in his home?
No, the Avel does have to be in the sukkah. The Gemara is saying the Gemara raises the possibility that the Avel would be exempt,
but
it rejects it and says the Avel is obligated in the sukkah. And we said either one of two reasons. Either because the sukkah is not the cause of his pain, meaning if he goes into his home, he's not saved from that anguish. Yeah. So there's no exemption.
But other anguish, one is patur from
Yeah, but if they're yitushim, if they're mosquitoes or other things like
that,
okay. Then he is
not
exempt.
Not a personal feeling.
Yeah, so it sounds like that the Avel, we're saying, has to control his his psychological anguish. You know, I actually thought that something maybe that Gemara is alluding to, why is it mentioned Avel, is Dafka, it's not just Avel in general. It's Avel and Sukkot. You know, when somebody loses a parent or somebody you're sitting shiva, the time that you feel the most, perhaps, you know, during the year, is on the Chagim. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're thinking about the last time you were here with that person. So it's an interesting, the fact that the Gemara speaks about an Avel, I actually think is very pointed, exactly. Because an Avel specifically, on Sukkot, feels that loss. And there he is mitzta'er. And you wonder, is he exempt or not? And therefore the Gemara reflects that conversation. Yes.
I feel a certain conflict. We talk about making an ara'im. And I guess the sort of the way...
We make it kevah.
We were raised, the purpose of going out to Sukkot, the Bnei Yisrael, traveling, and, you know... So part of the idea is to be in a very temporary, rustic.
Hold on, we're getting right there. This is like you guys are giving me the perfect segue for the next segment.
Did I say it right the way we made it?
Perfect, exactly. That was perfect. Okay, if you look at Roman numeral 2, same adirat keva, v'shev adirat arai. So we're going to about to set up the conflict right now. Okay, so far we've just said that all these halachot teach us that for Sukkot, it has to be keva, it has to be permanent. So all the halachot teaching us. But yet, there's a whole other series of halachot that seem to conflict with that concept. If you look at the Mishnah, source number 16, it's the first Mishnah in Sukkot. Sukkah, shehi gavol, lamalam eser mama, psula, Rabbi Yehuda, machshir. That a sukkah that's taller than 20 amot, is pasul, is disqualified. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's kshera. Now, why is it disqualified? So there are a number of opinions in the Amoraim of why it is disqualified. Let's look at the one that's underlined on the sheet. Rabba Amar, Rabba says, Mehacha, Pasuko teishmu shivat yamin, Amra Torah kol shivat yamin, tzei medirat keba v'shei medirat arai. That the Torah says you should live in the sukkah. What does that mean? That all 7 days you should go out from your permanent place and you should live in a temporary dwelling. Ad esrimama ademos adirato dirat arai. Until 20 amot, up meaning a less than 20 amot, a person would make a temporary dwelling. Amala mesrimama en ademos adirato dirat arai el adirat keva. Higher than 20 amot, nobody makes a temporary one. That's already a permanent fixture. And therefore it's psula, the sukkah is psula. Because the sukkah has to be temporary.
So how does that fit in with you have to make your...
We're going to get there. Let me add more to this though. So the Gemara says, wait a second, if that's true, Amrei Abaye, Ela me'ata osa mechitzot shel barzel v'sichach hagaban. Let's say you make a mechitza, you make the walls out of iron and of steel.
Can you?
No.
Yes.
No? Where do you have
walls? Can be.
Walls
can be.
So the
walls. Can be anything.
Okay, so the walls, you can even use the walls of your buildings. So according to you, Abai Azrav, according to you, that you're saying that it can't be over 20 amot. Because that's a structure that's permanent, and we need a structure that's temporary. So what about if you make the mechitzot out of barzel? So Rava says, Amar lei, achi kamina lecha. Adas rumamanda adam osa dirato dirato rai, ki avalei dirat keva nami nothing. Lamalam es rumamanda adam osa dirato dirato keva, ki avalei dirato rai nami lo nothing. No, it depends. If you make it over 20 amot, when a person would only build a permanent dwelling, then even if you use, you know, material that is temporary, the whole thing is out. Under 20 amot, where a person would make a temporary dwelling, even if you use strong mechitzot, the permanent walls, it's still okay. Meaning, the concept of temporary and permanent, that you have to make it temporary, is just an issue of the measurements. The mivneh, the structure itself, doesn't really have to be temporary. It has to look temporary. It has to have the measurements of a temporary place. But the actual chomer, the material that you use to build it, could in fact be permanent. But that's only true when it comes to the walls. That's only true. And what about the roof? So let's look at Tosfos in source number 17. Tosfos says, let's look at the last page. We'll skip the beginning of it. He asks this question. Start from the beginning, the top line, the Im Tomar. Tosfos says, V'kivan d'lo chashinan, elo shetei ru'uya lasoto aray. Once all we care about is that it should look arai. It should look temporary. Have the measurements of a temporary place. Even though you actually make it into something permanent. Why do we say that rain is a siman klala, is a curse, siman of bad tidings on the chag? V'halo yachol l'kvo anisarim v'masmarim. You're able to take all the schach in the world and then bunch it all together and put them so tightly interwoven and place them on the top in a way where the gshamim, with the rain, wouldn't get in. So you're able to do that. So why is it a siman klal? And Tosfos says that even if you're going to say that maybe it's a derabanan, really min haTorah it works. Rabban, once you start doing that, then we'll worry that maybe you're going to go into the house, and the house is definitely not a sukkah. So, therefore, it's basul. Even if that's true, and it's only Rabban, it's still shamim. It shouldn't be a siman kala. Saying it's a siman kala means, it implies, that the whole concept of sukkot is thrown out if it rains. But why should that be true? As long as the measurements are okay. So Tosfos answer is very important. Yisod. The Yishlam are looked by the underlines. Although we're not worried when it comes to the walls that it's made permanent, when it comes to schach, where the essence of the sukkah is called by the schach, it's not kosher until it is arai. I'm going to explain. I'm going to explain his proof in a second. Let's skip to the last line. That you need, when it comes to schach, you need it to be arai. The schach has to be temporary. Not just in its measurements, and its, but also in its material, to the effect where rain can come in. To the effect where rain, if you make your schach in a way where rain cannot come in, and the whole sukkah is pasul. Why? Because the sukkah has to be, by definition, has to be temporary. Has to be temporary. Now, I just want to show you. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, what is the height that has been stated that you're not allowed to light Hanukkah candles?
Very nice. Very nice.
What is that?
20 amot.
I can't remember. 20 amot. So there is.
Yeah, 20 amot is a very important measurement. And it actually reflects an earlier answer to Amorim, the tie to Hanukkah. And in general, the tie between Sukkot and Hanukkah is very pronounced and very profound. And I was debating if I was going to give that shir. Maybe I'll think about it. Maybe I'll throw that one in if you like that.
So but that's
a very important. It's a very important connection.
No, what is the Amorim?
Oh, that's all debates. Who knows? It's higher than all your sukkot. Don't worry about it. Okay, now I want to show you how complicated the schach is for a second. Look back to source number 16. Right before Rava, there's another answer of why it has to be 20 amot. On the third line, it's the answer of Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira says, the reason why it's up to 20 amot is it says in the pasuk in Yeshayahu, "V'sukkah tiel etzel yamam echorei," that the sukkah must be a shade for you from the sun. Adis from Amma Adam Yoshev Itzel Sukkah. The Ma'am is from Ainan the Yoshev Itzel Sukkah of itself final. Until 20 Amot, a person sits in the Tzel Sukkah. After 20 Amot, a person sits in the Tzel of the Tfanot, of the walls. That you need the Sukkah to protect you from the sun. You need the Schach to protect you from the sun. And therefore, any Schach, if it's over 20 Amot, it's not protecting you. It's the walls that are protecting you. So it's not good. It's not good. But under 20 Amot, it is good, because then the schach is the thing that's protecting you. Okay. Now, what's interesting about this position is the obvious contradiction. Because on the one hand, the sukkah is supposed to protect you from the sun. But on the other hand, does the sukkah really protect you?
No.
What doesn't it protect you from?
The rain.
The rain. It doesn't protect you from the rain. Now, this is not a small point. Because he quotes the Pasuk in Yeshayahu. If you look at the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Pasuk Yeshayahu is source number 18. The Pasuk says, on the Pasuk Vav, the Sukkah Tiel Etzel Yamam Echarev, that's what he quotes, the Sukkah will be a protection from the sun, and it will shield you from the storms and from the rain. So the Pasuk he quotes talks about a sukkah that is protecting you from the rain too. What sukkah is he talking about? Yeshayahu is talking about the sukkah ba'achrit hayamim, at the end of days. And what is the sukkah that he's talking about? It's not a sukkah. He's talking about Hashem. He's talking about the Shekhinah. At the end of days, the Shekhinah will come and rest, and all the nations of the world will see it, then it will come, and the Shekhinah will protect us from the sun, and will protect us from the rain. That's the Achrit Hayamim. Today, Sukkah, though, and Tosfos quotes Reb Zeira stops halfway in the Pasuk. Today, Sukkah only protects us from the sun, but it does not protect you from the rain. It has to be dry, it has to be temporary. It can't, if it protects you from the rain, it's not good. So we have over here is a contradiction. On the one hand, I gave you a whole series of halachot that showed that you're supposed to relate to the sukkah like it's your keva. On the other hand, we just saw a series of halachot that showed that the sukkah has to be aran. So how do we resolve this incredible tension and this seeming contradiction? Yes?
There's no contradiction between a sukkah that's temporary and bringing your best kelim and things like that.
So what are you saying? I like it. Keep on going.
You
made the
Arai
Keva.
Okay, well, which are the things that it's Keva? Which are the things that's Arai?
Things you could control and things you can't control.
Things control? No, you control both of those things.
You can't control the rains.
No, but you control how you build it. So what's the answer? You're getting there. Yeah.
Enhancement. In other words, you're making it temporary, but during that temporary time, you are making it as beautiful as possible.
Okay, so let me say that a little differently. The difference is between the structure of the sukkah itself and how we relate to the sukkah.
Right.
The sukkah itself has to be arai. It has to be the rustic, temporary dwelling under 20 amot with a temporary roof that lets rain in. The sukkah has to be temporary. But we relate to it, we have to relate to it like it's permanent. We have to relate to it, we have to treat it like it's permanent, even though it's arai. Think about this for a second. You're supposed to bring your best furniture in. You understand what that means when you bring your best furniture into a place that has a leaky roof? So you're supposed to relate to it like it's keva, even though it has to be, by definition, arai. Why is the sukkah, the mahut, the nature of the sukkah, why does it have this duality of this arayness, this temporariness in terms of its structure, but this tfiut, this permanence in how we relate to it? So I'd like to suggest, based on a hint in the Marsha, if you look at source number 20, that basically, the sukkah is a metaphor for life. The reason why we have a temporary dwelling that we relate to it like it's permanent is because in life, in life, we are filled with the arai, but we relate to them all like they're permanent. We think about our house like it's so strong and stable, and it gives us security, not just our house, but everything, our bank accounts, our finances, our social structures, our health, our all these things we think about like it's so permanent and so strong. We're mityaches to them. We treat them. We buy nice furniture. You buy nice furniture for what? We buy nice furniture. We put them in arai houses all the time. That's our lives. The sukkah isn't seven days a year. The sukkah is our life. It's a metaphor for our life. We like to pretend it's not true. We imagine, we dream, we fantasize, we trick ourselves to think that we're living with yitzivut and stability and structure and nothing can touch us. But as we learned in New York on September 11th, you're vulnerable anywhere. You're vulnerable anywhere. That is the ultimate lesson of Sukkot. It's the lesson of vulnerability. The Sukkot brings us out not to a fantasy world, but to be megaleh, but to reveal the illusion of our stability, so that we no longer live under that illusion. And what is it that is so important about this? Why is this recognition so critical? And on this note, it's important to realize that the schach, certainly, you know, there's a machloket whether the schach in the midbar was the anani akavod or was real sukkah. But there's no question in the literature, both halakhic and machshava, that the schach represents Hashem and the Shekhinah. And that coming under the sukkah is coming under the presence, is the presence of Hashem. And that's what you gain when you understand this concept of vulnerability, this wisdom of vulnerability. It's a story that Chief Rabbi of England, Rabbi Sachs, tells in one of his books, that he said he has a friend who is a great carpenter. And he's a rabbi friend, a great carpenter. And he himself, he admits, is not so handy with the hammer. And when it came time for Sukkot, his friend built this magnificent, glorious, incredible sukkah. And Rabbi Sachs, you know, built this literally the shaky, impermanent hut, you know, that that us poor rabbinic carpenters built. And sure enough, that night, the first night, there was a huge storm in England. And his friend comes out and he sees that his sukkah is destroyed. So his friend goes over to Rabbi Sachs' house, assuming he'll see the same thing by Rabbi Sachs' sukkah, and they go and check and investigate. And sure enough, Rabbi Sachs' sukkah is dead. And they're surprised, like, why, if you think that this is a wonderful carpenter to build a glorious sukkah, why is his standing and the friend's sukkah destroyed? So they go and check out, and they find that the difference between the sukkot is one now. Because Rabbi Sachs took his sukkah, and with one now, he attached it to the house, to a standing permanent structure. And the other guy's friend had a freestanding sukkah. And the lesson that Rabbi Sachs takes from this story is that in life, if you want to be able to withstand the storm, you need to be mechubar, you need to attach yourself to the one thing permanent that we have. It's not the house. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is the lesson of Sukkot. The lesson of the Sukkot is that when we are not secure, we realize that we need somebody. We need other people. Now, it was true in Manhattan, by the way, because we learned that we needed each other. And it was also true that people turned to God. One of the amazing things in September 11th, Mincha on September 11th, people just walked into shul, just came to shul. There's a sense of, you know what, we need something more. We need something higher. And we need each other. We certainly need Hashem. Now that doesn't mean that bad things won't happen. This is a critical lesson. Sukkah is very subtle. Sukkah doesn't tell you that, you know what, if you're under the Shekhinah, nothing bad is going to happen. How do I know that? Because you know what could happen? It still could rain. And the rain's going to get in. The Shekhinah protects you. It protects you from the sun. It does do some protection, but it doesn't protect you from the rain. And that is life. It's a metaphor for, first of all, Hashem is certainly protecting us. If Hashem wouldn't be protecting us right now, there's no way we, in the state of Israel, there's no we, the Jewish people, could exist. There's no way. It's impossible. Certainly we're living under the Tzel HaShechinah. There's no question about it. In our personal lives, in our national lives, there's no question about that we're living under the Tzel HaShechinah. But living under the Tzel HaShechinah does not mean that nothing bad is going to happen to you. It still can happen to you. Ba'achrit HaYamin, at the end of days, when Yeshaya speaks, then the Tzel HaShechinah will totally protect you. It won't always protect you now, but even if it doesn't always protect you now, it does something perhaps even more important than protecting you, or more important, but certainly equally. What does it do? What does it do? Say again? It connects you to Hashem. It connects you to that, which means that you're never alone. That is your strength. You're never alone. Pasuk in Tehillim says, "Ki avivi mi asavuni v'Hashem yasfeni." Rav Salvechik, in another one of his articles, writes about what does it mean, my father and my mother forsake me, but the Lord gathers me in. He said he remembers there was a time, he said, "How many of your parents ever forsake you?" He remembers the time he was being wheeled into surgery, and he had to say goodbye to his family. And even though he had to say goodbye to his family, there are places your family can't travel with you because they're mortal. They are limited. But wherever you go, v'Hashem ya'asfeini, Hashem is there. He is your strength. He is your strength. Gam ki'elech v'geit tzama lo yira ki atayim adi does not mean that though I walk through the valley of the shadow that I fear no evil, not because bad things won't happen. But shivtcha mishantecha hema yinachamuni, it's your staff, it's your presence. You are the comfort to me. Living under the tachat tzel HaShechinah is the ultimate comfort in life. And the sukkah is our, not 7 day a year excursion, it's our reality. And if we learn to appreciate our vulnerability and the wisdom that comes from our vulnerability, the sense that we need others, and that we need a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it will mean that we will attach ourselves to Him, and it will mean that we will never be alone, and that we'll always have the strength to persevere and grow. Bezrat Hashem, we will see the time when the whole pasuk of Yeshaya will be fulfilled, when we will be protected completely from both the sun and the rain. But until that time comes, our comfort rests in knowing that the Shekhinah is close to us, and that we're never alone. And it's our relationship with Hashem that gives us the strength to endure, and the courage to aspire to great heights.